sights to show you.
Copy like I was doing a fucking swig of whiskey. God damn.
Well, on that note, happy birthday,
hey,
Anthony.
Hey, it's my birthday, guys. Kinda.
Kinda, sort of.
In 2 days from when this launches. But,
yeah.
But we get a lot of listens towards the weekend, so you know.
Happy freaking birthday.
Yay.
Anthony Fuentes is turning 47 years old.
That's not true. As we just got done talking about all our interpersonal drama.
You don't take that back.
You're like, by the way, while you're down, here's a fucking trick.
No.
Oh,
happy birthday, Anthony.
Thank you. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to week two of my birthday month.
Yes. And
the celebration of Anthony, me.
Yes.
Yes.
He's just going to take the reins on this one. But welcome back to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, the birthday boy himself, Anthony Fuentes.
Yeah, it's me.
Yay. Of course, this week we had to, of course, cover this movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we did it last year, too.
We did it last year, but also this year is a very special. I mean, last year you had a Friday the 13th birthday as well.
Yep. It's leap year fucked it up.
Yeah. You know what? I was really looking forward to having a Saturday birthday this year, but because of leap year, I went from having a Friday birthday last year to having a Sunday birthday this year. So.
Oh, no. Now you gotta wait like seven years. Yeah, you gotta wait a while.
Yeah, I'm not gonna have a Saturday birthday in my entire 20s. So.
Oh, jeez. Fuck leap year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leap year.
No, it's bleak year, too. Well, I get two Friday birthdays, so that's okay.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. God. Anyway, today we're covering Friday the 13th, part 3. So...
Yeah!
Woo.
Hey, it's a very, very big fundamental... Most fundamental Friday the 13th, aside from the first one.
I mean, sure. It's fine.
I mean, as a movie, it's not. But as a... I guess actual content of the film, no.
Yeah, in terms of establishing horror tropes, sure.
Yeah, it did kind of bring us one of the most iconic horror looks in cinema.
Yeah.
And it was all very haphazardly done, which is what we're going to guide you through today.
As always.
Yep, because you know these things are barely planned.
These things are barely planned, and then also, while they're filming, they don't give a shit about the actors. They're just like, you, over there, make it look good. And
yeah,
it's just like,
stand, show the titties. Cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yep, and we're going to show you why and the whole direction behind the titty showing and everything else with this movie. But IMDb, of course, has some shit for us like it does every week. What's the shit is it going to tell us? Well, having revived from his wounds, Jason Voorhees takes refuge at a cabin near Crystal Lake. As a group of co-eds arrive for their vacation, Jason continues his killing spree.
Yeah.
Accurate.
That's the movie. But that's also every single Friday the 13th ever.
True, but people weren't as sick of it because it was only the third time they did it.
I'm sick of it, and it's the third one. Because it ends and starts the same way as the first, as the second one.
And it does. It
does.
So
you know how
does.
It starts? It starts with a 15-minute recap of the second one.
Technically, it's like a 6-minute recap.
It felt like 15
It felt pretty
minutes.
Long, though. Yeah, it felt pretty long.
Ugh. But anyway.
And this one was written by Martin Kitroser, Carol Watson, and Petru Popescu.
Very good.
Yeah, cool.
It took 3 people to write this movie.
Yeah, you'll exactly... Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Again, we're going to talk about the production of this. It definitely took 3 people to do this shit. But it was directed by Steve Miner, who I like. Steve Miner's pretty good. And we did like Friday the 13th Part 2, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I did like Friday the 13th Part 2.
Yeah, this one was like...
I don't know how I felt about this one.
This was a lot more basic. But we get the mask! Anyways.
We do.
Yeah, this one is starring Dana Kimmel and Paul Krotka. And that's about the only noteworthy people. Paul Kraken!
Yeah.
This one was budgeted at $2.2 million. Which is, I think, a little more than the last one, and released on August 13th, 1982, so that Friday the 13th.
I was going to say, was it a Friday the 13th?
It totally was. And it actually made $36.7 million, which is pretty goddamn good, making it one of the most profitable in this franchise, actually.
Oh, wow, so, really?
Yeah. I mean, some of the later ones obviously made way more, but, like, among the 80s ones, yeah, this one kind of killed it. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So to kind of start with Friday the 13th Part 3, we have to go back to the end of Friday the 13th Part 2.
As the movie actually does.
As the movie does, so must the podcast.
So must, I like that. That's a good way of doing that. As the movie does, so does the podcast. Let's commence!
So must the podcast. And then we all wear robes and light our candles, and it's very ritualistic.
There's 13 candles. We just take out the third one. We're like, psst.
And so it commences.
Commence away.
So when Amy Steele finished filming Friday the 13th Part 2, she was exhausted, as I can imagine. So even though the second film wasn't nearly as successful as the first, it was still very, very much profitable. Just period.
Mm-hmm.
And a franchise was set to be built around her character, Jenny.
Oh, Amy Steele.
Yes. But it was also during this time that the stigma from slashers was very, very much starting to affect the professionals that worked on them.
Yeah, this is when Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert were like, well, this is why everything fucking sucks in this genre.
Yeah.
Like, just hammering. Like, people were campaigning against slashers at this point. It's like, bad.
So the producers wanted her to be their Jamie Lee Curtis, but Steele wanted to be taken seriously as an actor. Curtis still had a reputation as a screen queen above all else at this point as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, this was bad news for the writers and returning director Steve Miner, who had just built a whole sequel around her character.
Yeah, they were, they actually got pretty far in the whole planning process for what the third movie was going to be.
So in the initial version of Friday the 13th Part 3, Jenny was going to be sent to a mental institution to deal with the trauma from surviving the second film. Jason would arrive at the mental institution to finish the job and go on a classic Jason killing spree attempting to do so. Pretty sure this is a Halloween movie.
Yeah, this is Halloween too.
And also a, well, I mean, yes, but the mental institution specifically, like, this is when Michael Myers, like, technically kills Laurie Strode. And it's like, it's not H2O.
No, it's the one after Resurrection.
The one you hate.
Yeah, this is, that's the Busta Rhymes one.
Yes.
That's,
and we will get to why eventually.
Eventually, guys. God damn.
But then they also do mental institutions in A Nightmare on Elm Street and Dream Warriors.
That's true.
Mental institutions are becoming a staple, I guess.
Yeah, well, it almost happened, but obviously. Obviously.
Thank God. They just stuck with the woods. Stick to what you know. But Amy Steele really thought her career was set to take off, so she declined the offer to appear in the third installment of the franchise, opting for TV work instead.
That's how bad slashers had a stigma. They're just that like, sucks. You can work on a slasher, or you can go back to fucking TV. She's like, I'll do it. I'll go back to TV.
I'll
fuck
go
that.
Back to TV. Yeah. Fuck that shit.
I'll go back to Days of Our Lives. I'm going to live all my life like this last day of my goddamn life.
Yeah. Ultimately, this worked against her, as she would soon be back to being a scream queen for a one-off film, April Fool's Day, and eventually bow out to become a psychologist in real life. So.
Instead of the final girl who actually wanted to be a psychologist in Friday the 13th Part 2.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So, on this experience, Steele states, roles were limited. It was mostly about screaming. I regret not doing the third film. It was one of my biggest regrets.
I feel like the way you said that was her, how she answers that question every time somebody asks her. Well, you know, roles were limited, blah, 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 blah. I regret not doing it. Fuck
it was,
you.
Yeah.
Stop asking me. I'm a psychologist now.
I'm a psychologist now. I help people in need.
Ugh.
But even without their final girl, Steve Miner and his team of filmmakers were encountering an even bigger problem that threatened to derail the entire production. Slasher fatigue.
Yes.
Luckily for them, there was a new trend that was taking over Hollywood. The industry's reoccurring love affair with 3D.
Yep. Oh.
And this movie is so obviously a made-for-3D movie.
It's like, if you want to say on the nose, like, they're throwing stuff at your nose on the screen.
This is like Spy Kids 3D. Bad.
Oh my God. This is so Spy Kids 3D, but like...
It's bad.
Pretty rated R.
I mean, yes, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, where they're like, there's so many moments where it's like, it's so obviously meant to be seen in 3D.
Like, what, is this a paddle? Is this a paddle right in your fucking face?
Well, versus like My Bloody Valentine 3D. Like, they're like, you can still watch it and be like, okay, this is fine. Like, you don't have to watch it in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone did. But,
No, but it's like, still with this one, it was just like, they would stop the movie to do, like, a minute of 3D shit and be like, okay, well, let's resume the scene now.
I know, with the fucking yo-yo and, yep, like, the pole. It was dumb.
Oh, my gosh. Anyways, let's get further into this. So, just 2 months after the release of the second Friday the 13th film, Filmway Pictures released a film that caught Hollywood by surprise. A Spanish-American 3D Western film starring some dude actually named Tony Anthony.
Tony Tone.
Oh my god, they would kill it in a Friday the 13th film. I would love that.
Tony Dose.
And just so you know, guys, I say this all the time, but as an Anthony, you don't ever call us Tony.
We all
pick it when we're young, and we stick to that fucking name. You say it, we're not even gonna acknowledge that. This guy is the guy that got to break that rule and have both of them right there. He can go by either one.
Right, and so just so we're clear, you're an established Anthony.
I'm an established Anthony. Do not call me Tony.
You don't look like a Tony.
Oh, thank you.
I would never call you Tony.
People have. Bitches.
Why?
I don't know, assholes, dude. I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, that's fair. I got... What did I get? I got... Lexi.
You got a Lexi thrown at you?
Well, my full name's Alexandra.
Well, yeah, but still, that's shitty.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I also got a lot of people, because growing up, everyone called me Allie.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a cool one, though. I can dig that.
I did. My family still calls me it. Yeah. Like, that's my family nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who knew me before college still calls me that for the most part. But everyone would call me Alex in, like, elementary school because they just assumed that's what I went by. And that's why I went by it in college because I was just like, this is so much easier.
Okay, for me in elementary school, there was me, Anthony, and there was one other. There was a Tony.
Mm.
So we were just like, cool. That's
Tony Anthony.
Tony Anthony. Distinguished. Never again from there. Never. Ugh. But Tony Anthony again, this guy was baller. He had both of them right there. He got both. Good on him.
But, thanks for including this absolutely non-needed, so you could talk about your name.
Yeah, I totally did. Anyways, but the film was a huge hit for the time. So much so that they legitimately didn't produce enough 3D glasses to meet demand.
Oh my god.
No, they seriously did not. Soon, films like Jaws 3D, Amityville 3D, and Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, were put into production. And Friday the 13th had its fucking gimmick and a cheap enough production to beat them all to the punch. Because as we all know, these movies are goddamn cheap.
Yeah.
Yep. Which we're going to get even further into right now. So, Friday the 13th Part 3, that's a tongue twister when I say it, was set to be the first 3D Paramount film since 1954's Jivaro, and the first to be put into wide release by a major studio, seeing as the technology was way too expensive to put out on such a huge scale in the past.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm surprised they did a 3D movie in 1954?
Well, the 3D was like... It was the red and blue, and only certain theaters can do it, so there was always, like, special 3D screenings.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So it wasn't like how we have it now. It was fairly limited.
Well, I mean, I still remember, I mean, the red and blue glasses.
Spy Kids 3D and the DVD. In the fucking DVD, I remember that, too.
God. I mean, it was still a thing until, like, I don't know, the early, like, what, mid 2000s?
I mean, it's a pretty reliable, cheap way to do 3D.
Yeah,
but this was going to be different, which of course we'll get into. Yeah.
Gotta be different.
Gotta be better. So writer Ron Kurtz, who would be a mainstay for the franchise, actually opted out of writing the third installment to, I don't know, fuck off somewhere. He didn't. So he would come back. New producer, Frank Mancuso Jr., who may or may not have accidentally ousted one of his mentors on the first two films to get the job. It was a total accident. Enlisted husband and wife writing team Martin Kittroser and Carol Watson, who would go on to work on Quentin Tarantino films.
Ah!
Yeah. They wrote this movie.
Interesting.
I know.
I couldn't give you one memorable piece of dialogue from this movie, and I watched it half an hour ago.
Yeah, I have no idea. I honestly don't remember these characters' fucking names. Be honest,
like I literally finished it an hour ago.
Yeah, I the bikers maybe. We'll get into that. Anyways, Mancuso actually fucking hated their script though.
Ha.
Yep, he's like Tarantino be damned. He said fuck him. And he gave Romanian-born Petru Popescu the chance to give the film a once-over. and not receive credit on the final film because it's fucking Hollywood.
Of course.
Yep, she received no credits. The team also enlisted director of photography Gerald Feel, who earned the role thanks to his research on 3D technology for a Peter Pan film that never actually got made.
I was never one of those kids who was obsessed with Peter Pan.
I liked him.
I liked Peter Pan. Yeah. But I, like now, even mm-hmm. now, like, there are people who are, like, obsessed with Peter Pan.
No.
And, like, anything, or even, like, Hook or anything that had anything to do with Peter Pan as a kid.
I think Hook reinstilled the, like, joy of it because, like, the Disney cartoon's kind of whatever once you, like, have Mulan and the Lion King in your brain.
Peter Pan, the cartoon, like the Disney cartoon, mm-hmm. irritates the shit out of me.
Really? Yeah. Why?
He's annoying.
He is a piece of shit.
Tinkerbell's a little shit.
She is. Yeah, she's a little shitster. That's true.
Like, I don't like Tinkerbell.
Wendy's just passive as fuck. Like, oh, things are happening in Neverland's cool.
Yeah, and then Captain Hook is annoying. And then, like, the alligator with the clock that's always yeah. ticking drives me nuts, and I only have to listen to it for parts of the movie.
I like his character design, though. The alligator looks pretty yeah. cool, yeah.
But, yeah, so, sorry. Peter Pan just did...
You know what? Fuck Peter Pan. How yeah, about that?
I'm incensed with rage.
Well, this film didn't even get made, so...
Ha!
But at last, though, all the pieces were beginning to be put in place, and Friday the 13th Part 3... was set to film under the fake title Crystal Japan, starting a long tradition of Friday the 13th films being given production names after David Bowie songs.
That makes me happy.
Yup, from here on, they're all Bowie songs for the That's fake names.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. As we just covered a Bowie film, like, not even that long ago. Yeah. And a 3D film. It's just all stirring together.
It's just stirring together. Well, and then also all the David Bowie, like, run-ins that I had earlier
yes,
today.
Yes, that was today.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Tell them a little bit. Tell the audience a little
yes.
bit.
Yes. So, at the time of this is recording, I was in San Diego earlier today and came back just so I could record this episode for you fine folk. I went to a coffee shop that had a David Bowie mural. It's called Subterranean. It's on 30th Street in San Diego. Check it out. Very cool. Support small businesses.
Yep.
And then I was at, it's called, let me look it up real quick. But I went right next to it down the street is mm-hmm. another small business that was really cool that I enjoyed. And they had... what was it called? It was called Pigment, and they had like...
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And that was very, like, hipstery. They had their own, like, it was like Build-A-Bear, but for, mm-hmm. like, succulent collections. Like, it was really cool. Like, you could build your own little succulent garden.
Fucking hipster-ass.
It was really cool, though. I kind of wanted to do it. But, yeah.
As you wear flannel.
I wasn't wearing this. I was wearing a teddy bear jacket. So, okay. It was even more hipster.
It was, yeah.
So, and they had, like, a whole corner of just, like, David Bowie stuff. They had a book. I almost got a deck of David Bowie playing cards.
Oh, my God. That would have been the shit. Dude.
I know. I might have to go back. I mean, I'm going to go back within the next month or so. So, I'm going to have
it.
To.
Do it. Oh, dude. So. As you can tell, we are a pro David Bowie, pro Jennifer Tilly podcast. Over
yes,
here. That's what we stand
so,
by.
So I ran into David Bowie all over the place today.
Oh my
it
gosh.
Was only like that one photo of him too.
Really?
Yeah.
Just in separate locations and honoring him in different ways.
Yeah, it was only this like version.
Right, the one that we posted up.
Yeah,
God,
the
damn.
One you posted. So
damn.
It was cool. So there were playing cards, mugs, a book. Like it's like Where's Waldo, but it's Where's Bowie. There was a lunchbox. It was cool as shit.
As I was driving back from my hometown last night, I actually was listening to Golden Years. It came up to wake me up amongst my drama thing that was going on.
Yeah, so I have that song, mm-hmm. and then right after that on my liked songs on my Spotify, it's Lazarus. So it's a really bad tone.
Damn.
It's like super like, woo, yeah. And then it's Lazarus, which is a very... mellow, sad, mm-hmm. very, like, angsty song from Black Star. And every time I listen to it, it makes me sad.
Oh.
So, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Like, it just, it, like,
it's
tugs.
That talent on display yeah. right there.
And you can't put David Bowie into any of our outlines ever.
No, I know. We're just going to goddamn rant. Okay. We're coming back. Anyways, the Bowie title, Crystal Japan, was not the only deception from the production, by the way. They needed to cast this bitch, and they did so with actors who had no idea they were reading for a fucking Friday the 13th film. Could you believe that? Let's do it. Tell us.
In Westwood, California, 18-year-old Larry Zerner was handing out movie tickets for The Road Warrior when he was spotted by soon-to-be-discarded writing duo Martin Kitrosser and Carol Watson. Something about him prompted the writers to ask him to audition, and his natural performance ended up impressing director Steve Miner, who cast him as Shelley, the character who would provide Jason his iconic hockey mask.
You know, and he's... How do you feel about Shelley?
I wanted to like him.
I wanted to like him, too, because everyone else is so goddamn plain. Yeah. And he was trying, but he was still pretty goddamn annoying.
Like, he was kind of a dick, but also everyone was kind of, like, overreacting to his, like...
Like, wow, Shelley, are you a person having a personality? God damn you. And he's like, dude, I just want to have fun.
Or like, anytime he did a prank, like, they're like, you're such a dick. And it's just like, I have friends who have done way more dickish things, and I didn't even get mad about it. Like,
honestly, I kind of hated him until he had that whole speech with the girl. He was just like, you know, if I didn't act like this, nobody would even look at me. And I was like, oh, Shelley, I feel so bad for you.
Well, also, like, I really liked his character because I think his character was really instrumental in, like, the comedic relief murders.
Yeah.
The trope of, like, all the, like, the comedic relief gets murdered, and then also the stoner gets murdered. Because, like, not him, but there's another character.
There's the other stoner, yeah.
Yeah, that and makes... so I just think that's kind of interesting. But,
plus, he's got a nice face. I wanted to like him. I wanted to like him more than, you know, I ended up doing overall. Yeah.
It's true. I liked him enough. I liked him more than anyone else.
Anyone else, yeah.
And because everyone was kind of a dick.
All fucking sucked. Anyways.
Anyway, so speaking of Jason, the producers had plenty of tricks left in their bag of, quote, dick moves, as they offered...
We fucked this up. Remember, what was it, Stevie D last time? I can't remember.
Steve Daskowice, who played Jason for the majority of the second film. Without being credited, by the way. So they gave him a chance to play the character for real on the stipulation that he paid for his own airfare to California. So he declined that offer, telling the producers to fuck off, I'm going to assume.
Yeah, let's assume he did that, because I would tell the producers to fuck off, dude.
Under the stipulation, like, you can play Jason if you fly your ass to California by yourself.
On your dime.
Fuck off.
Dude.
And you're not even going to reimburse me? Like,
no.
Kick rocks, buddy.
And they didn't credit his ass for the second one. They gave it to that fucking other guy, the other Tony motherfucker.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
God, Tony.
We're already...
I don't know if I know a nice Tony.
I know one that's kind of cool.
I don't.
And then the elementary one was cool. That's like two out of like the many Tonys that I've...
Exactly.
God damn it. God damn
anyway,
it.
The
But you know a cool Anthony.
I do. Yeah. I do know a cool Anthony.
Yay! Whose birthday's this week?
It's your birthday. Congratulations. Do you want to tell everyone how old you're turning?
No.
You don't want to talk about it?
No, don't want to talk about it. Hey, we're going to a comedy club this weekend, all right? Fucking.
It's true. The producers replaced him with 6'3" stunt actor Richard Brooker. Brooker.
Brooker sounds cooler, though.
Brooker, a former trapeze artist who came from the UK and also had the added benefit of being able to do his own stunts and was, you know, local.
Yeah, he was around. He was generally just around. They're like, hey, big guy. Come on.
That's the equivalent of someone walking down the street and pointing out like a Ben Kissel and being like, hey, big guy, can you do stunts?
Do you want to make money? Do you like money? You don't have to show your fucking face.
That's funny.
They did that with fucking Larry Zerner. He's like, hey, kid with the fro.
I know.
This fucking... I these productions. But anyways.
Larry Zerner and his, like, adorable little Jufro.
I know. Oh, he talks about that in the making of stuff, too.
What?
Oh, and all the making of docs.
Yeah?
Yeah, he always mentions his fro.
Really?
Yeah,
that's adorable.
He's a good interviewer. He really is.
Well, he seems like a funny guy.
Yeah, exactly. We really only had better fucking writers.
I know. Whatever. Anyway, Catherine Parks, who had been crowned Miss Florida at the Miss America pageant, was in town pursuing an acting career and was cast oddly quickly for the third installment, and for one big reason. According to uncredited writer Pescu, the producers were casting mostly for looks. Acting ability be damned.
They didn't give a shit, dude. They're like, we need to murder pretty folks.
That's awkward.
Let's find the prettiest folks.
Eesh. Tracy Savage and Paul Kratka came from Little House on the Prairie and General Hospital, respectively. With the latter knowing almost jack shit about horror films. So,
fucking Paul, dude. All right.
Little House on the Prairie is actually, I think my cousin owned every single DVD, like, season of Little House on the Prairie.
Dude, Little House on the Prairie is one of those shows when cartoons were over. I would see the opening of, like, that and be like, cool, okay. Next channel.
I know, okay. Done. Next, yeah. Mm-hmm. I read the books like a motherfucker.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were children's books.
But we're going to take a quick aside here. What the fuck was that show about?
A Little House on the Prairie.
Like, just, like, was it set? What was, okay. Like, I don't understand.
It was focused around this girl named Laura Ingle.
Okay, I recognize the name.
Okay, her family literally moved to a prairie and built a house, and it was about their life.
That's it?
Yes.
Okay, so like,
there's 12 seasons.
What the? How do you?
I think. Hold on, let me look this up.
I don't know how you do anything with? You're like, well, yep, the corn's not growing again.
How many seasons? Hold on. Nine seasons. Nine. Okay, I was being dramatic.
But nine's still a shit ton for having to do a whole seasons, old school OG seasons of TV, which were long as hell.
Yeah.
They were long as hell.
It has a, ready for this?
Yes.
7.4 out of 10 from IMDb. 93% like this TV show based on Google users.
Okay, so they kept watching after cartoons. Like, what? I don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready? Were the books good?
Yeah.
Okay. Books were
good. The books were one of my favorite, favorites growing up.
Okay.
Again, they're very short. They're, they're drawn very prettily, they told cool stories about, living on the prairie. And I was just like, wow, I'm going to go watch TV now because that's a thing I have now. Like, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
All right. Little House on the Prairie. Just, And now I know. Now I know.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I needed to. I asked. I wanted to know.
My mom also loved Little House on the Prairie.
My grandma loved it.
Yeah, so my mom was just like, "You're gonna read these books and you're gonna like it." And I was just like, "Okay."
It was Little House on the Prairie. All my children. Those were my summers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was this one book where one of the books was like the winter time. Like it was about winter time on the prairie or whatever. Yeah. And it was like how in the attic they had all the their food storage for the winter.
Huh.
And how they would fill cast iron skillets with snow and make little maple designs on it with maple syrup. Yeah. And the snow would harden it and it would turn it into candy. And I thought it was the coolest shit on the planet.
That is cool. All right. Anyway, I gotta borrow those DVDs.
No, this was in the book.
Oh.
This is the book. These are children's books. Like, literally my 5-year-old sister could read them.
Oh, my gosh.
And I loved it. It was great.
All right. Let's go back.
Bringing it back. Yes. The lead role of Chris Higgins was the hardest to cast, forcing producers to audition numerous actresses who were expected to act and look good.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
High demand.
Luckily, Dana Kimmel was up to the task, though she came with the stipulation that any references to her having sex be removed from the script. This was for undisclosed personal reasons.
All right.
Now that the producers had a last cobbled... Thanks, cats. Now that the producers had finally cobbled together a cast, it was now time to cobble together a film with very uncooperative 3D cameras.
Oh, yeah. This is a Friday the 13th production. It's not going to be easy, obviously. Well, it's going to be a little easier than the other ones, at least. Anyways, so Friday the 13th Part 3 was shot at Valuzette Movie Ranch in... How do you say this?
Saugus,
California. And even as production was in full swing, no one knew what Jason's mask would actually look like. They really last-minuted this shit. So lots of people have claimed credit for the iconic goalie mask. But ultimately, it was good old laziness that won the day. It was during pre-production, when makeup tests were set to take place, actually. So by this point, the team still had no idea what the mask would actually look like, and it needs to look good in 3D in particular. That was the stipulation right there. There were options, but nothing really seemed to grab anyone behind the scenes. It was kind of shit all around. Yeah. But 3D special effects supervisor Martin J. Sadoff just happened to be a fan of the Detroit Red Wings.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes. And carried a bag.
I'm sorry.
I know. and carried a bag of sports equipment with him regularly. In fact, yeah. What?
Question. Do you actually like the Kings?
I like the Kings now. I'm not really a fan of hockey, to be honest with you.
This concludes the Horrible People's Podcast. Thank you, everyone, for
Why?
Listening.
You like the Kings?
No, I hate the Kings.
Oh, okay.
I love hockey. That's the thing.
Interesting. Who's
I
your team?
I love hockey. So, I grew up being a San Jose Sharks fan because my dad was a Sharks fan, and I'm from Northern California.
Yeah, you're from North California. That makes sense. That makes sense.
And the Sharks hate the Kings, therefore.
Yep. I know.
So, I have to on principle. And then when I moved to Southern California, I liked the Kings. And then, because that was who I was forced to like because I lived here. And then I learned I could have an opinion of my own, and then I went back to not liking the Kings.
Interesting. Okay, see, for me, I'm an L.A. resident now.
So you have to. But now I live in Anaheim, so I can just like the Ducks and like not give a shit.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so yeah, when the last Kings game I went to, my friend Phil, who is actually going to appear on this podcast later on, he kept quoting Mighty Ducks quotes. While we were watching and pissing off my friends who are hardcore Kings fans. My IE friends are the hardcore Kings fans, which is why I adopted the team. Because I'm like, yeah, it makes sense, you know?
Okay.
LA adopted it.
And I won't talk shit to your IE friends, but...
Yeah, but also, I went to college in Northern California, so I always had SoCal Pride going up there. And the Sharks were a point of contention. The Sharks in Golden State were our, they would draw the lines right there.
Really?
Yeah, battle lines right there for sure.
Oh, man. Anyway, I saw hockey and I had to interject because hockey is like white people sports.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. Yeah.
So I love hockey and that's one of like the few sports that like I understand and like I'm like, I'm into it. I've never been to a hockey game, but like.
Oh, dude. And the funniest thing though is Phil would be quote, he'd be like, when are they going to do the flying V? They're like, shut the fuck up.
Oh, I love that. Oh, man. Phil, you're the greatest.
Hey, Phil. Anyways, where the fuck was I? Oh, yeah, he was a Red Wings fan. And not only that, though, the whole 3D crew were total hockey fans.
That's
like,
awesome.
Like, they were, like, about hockey. I think they would play, too. But, he's actually generally credited with, well, you know, pulling out the mask and just handing it over to Steve Miner during a makeup test.
He was the one who had it. Like, if he wasn't a hockey fan for whatever reason...
They'd still be cycling masks.
If he was, like, traumatized as a child and, like, put down his hockey fascination, like, we... Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's so cool.
No, yeah. He literally just was like, here, try this one. And Steve, they did the lighting test and just everyone on the fucking back crew, they knew immediately when they saw that Jason was going to fucking look like this.
Forever.
Yeah. Because this was actually planned to be the final installment. Like, they were like, we're going to cap this off with the scariest looking motherfucker. And they, like, that was their in their mind right there, right? So, yeah. The final version of the mask had to have a few more holes added to it with some red marks and all those. Make it a little more grimy. But from there, the rest is history. Horror iconography was fucking born.
Fuck yeah, it was.
Yep. Even though part 3, again, was intended to be the last, you know, it wasn't. The mask was kind of too good.
Yeah.
But in terms of actual onset injuries, it seems like the production team had finally learned not to torture their actors.
What?
Yes. Well, that or they were too preoccupied with brand new 3D technology that had never actually been used before, and brand new camera crane technology that had never been used before.
Jesus Christ.
So they had other things fucking their shit up.
This font looks like SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh my god, it does. Well, let's see. Let's look at this. That's very good. Let's look.
I was looking at it and I'm like, this looks like a title card for a SpongeBob SquarePants episode.
6 months later, the
new
film's
tech,
in shambles.
Yeah, new tech, new frustration. Anyway.
By the way, listeners, just keep that in because when we do scripts, we create fonts and headers that you guys don't actually hear.
No.
You guys don't. But it's for
it's
us.
It's just for us.
It, like, helps our creativity.
And Anthony's are actually quite funny. And mine are usually quite boring.
No, yours are very stylistic to the films, which I appreciate.
Yes, mine are stylized to the film, but they're also always, like, production outline. Like they're never, oh, yeah. Like they're never like creatively named.
Thank you.
Yours are always like his name was, oh, you get it. Like funny yeah. shit like that.
Thank you.
Like that one I wanted to directly call out because that one's very funny.
Because I feel like I made that specifically because in the last two we've had variations on his name was Jason. So I'm like, by this point we fucking know.
We get it.
We get it.
Anyway, moving on. The 3D cameras were so difficult that actors would have to completely redo takes without any adjustments or notes due to the cameras glitching out.
See, they didn't physically torture their actors.
They emotionally tormented them.
They tormented them with boredom and repetition and tedium.
My favorite.
Yep.
Whereas previous films would only take roughly 4 weeks to film, the third installment took around 12.
Damn.
That sucks. Holy shit.
Yeah, dude.
3 months?
Fucking lame.
That sucks.
3 months, part three? Oh my god.
Illuminati. Things didn't exactly start off great. The crane shot used in the gas station scene took a lot longer on account of the crane setup completely collapsing on the very first take. Yike.
I just thought about the SpongeBob thing, where it's like 12 weeks later, and then like the crane's just falling down.
So many takes later that the old narrator got tired, and they had to hire a new one.
God damn, you were a SpongeBob. Ooh, nice. I'm glad I put the font on there. It was awesome.
Shots took far longer to set up thanks to the need for bright lighting throughout the film. So the 3D cameras actually had a background to work with.
And
God damn it.
This is why this third film has no fucking style compared to part two.
It's true. It's very cut and dry.
Yeah.
There's no, you're right. There's no like any real stylized elements to it.
Mm-mm.
Let's see here. The house, barn, and lake were all built on location, and the lake itself was so poorly constructed that it drained into the soil after 1 week.
Yep.
Oh my god, you idiots.
That's where the point two and the 2 million comes from.
There is an alluded rape subplot in the film that was a big source of contention between lead actress Dana Kimmel and director Steve Miner. Ultimately, the two decided to leave the more explicit details out of the film and keep only a hint at the scenario in what would turn out to be a very controversial flashback scene.
Yeah, among Jason fans, this whole subplot's kind of just like,
what?
Like, to me, also, I'm like,
what?
Why is she, like, just trauma? Fucking A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird.
Mm-hmm.
A car chase scene was actually written to take place after the general store confrontation between Vera and Shelley and the bikers, but it was never filmed, much to the dismay of Larry Zerner, who really, really wanted to do a car chase.
Oh, I remember the interview seeing him talk about this. He's just like, come on. Like, it would have been so cool.
I mean, he got to run over their bikes with the little bug.
That's true. The little bug. That's right.
It's a yellow bug. Like, although those things are fucking heavy.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I've been in one before, mm-hmm. and I was like, the door for this is heavy as hell.
Dude, those OG fucking cars, man. They didn't change that design since the 60s.
Yeah, what are they, German?
Yeah, German. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Volkswagen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, technical difficulties aside, Steve Miner was loved by the cast and crew, who considered him very easy to get along with, even though he spent most of his time trying to troubleshoot those damn 3D cameras, as opposed to giving the actors actual notes and character motivations, should be.
Oh,
where's
my God.
Where's the tech crew on this?
It's a very cheap movie.
Where's the tech crew? The director shouldn't be doing troubleshooting. Anyway, whatever.
They're playing hockey in the soil pile that they have apparently. Now that the fucking thing drained.
Yeah, now that's in the mud?
In the
fucking mud?
Oh.
God. Anyway, so this is especially true with Jason, as Richard Brooker was asked not to even bother Steve Miner with such concerns. He was, to put it simply, be a, quote, mindless killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Alas, the original ending to the film had Final Girl Chris actually end up being decapitated by Jason as she returns to the cabin thinking he was dead. This was actually shot, and the look of Jason was very similar to his appearance in Friday the 13th Part 2.
Mm-hmm. Good old redneck Jason.
Woo!
Yep.
With the ending in the bag, and yes, an initial X rating from the MPAA, it was time to see if audiences were ready for a 3D horror film.
Yep. They cut those kill scenes down. because the MPAA as
was
we...
just like, fuck you guys. Mm-hmm.
Everything X. Tits, fine. Yeah. Tits, fine.
As much, like, well, this actually, all things considered, this one has significantly less tits.
Yeah, that's true.
In comparison to other Friday the 13th movies.
For all of them, you actually get
is, like, the shower scene.
Yes, and it's, like, mostly side boop.
Yeah.
It's, like, mostly side boop.
It's, like,
boop.
90%.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, yeah, that actress who was in, I forget the character's name, but she plays a, was she pregnant in the film, if I remember correctly?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She was a child actor. Yeah, she's been in Hollywood forever, and it was, like, kind of a big deal to do the nude scene, actually. But no, ultimately, I think in the interview, too, she was like, but at the end of the day, she, like, embraced it. She's like, from there on, she's like, you know what? Cool, my first nude scene was in Friday the 13th movie. Makes
Whatever.
Sense. Makes
Fuck
sense.
You guys.
Yes. So, with that, though, let's see how this bitch did in the box office, and spoiler alert, pretty goddamn good.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of Friday the 13th movies now. So, Paramount spent an additional $2 million, the same as the film's budget, to augment 813 out of 1,079 screens so that they could play the film. The remaining screens were for drive-in theaters where teenagers could make out and do teenager things. So, yeah. After seeing the film for the first time, actor David Kedems, who plays Chuck, who was fucking forgettable, walked up to Steve Miner and told him that the film was crap. Miner simply told him that it's Friday the 13th and it's in 3D. It was going to be a fucking hit. So shut the fuck up, David.
No one cares about your opinion.
Yeah. God damn it. So, but according to critics, Kedems was in the right. But according to audiences, Miner was more right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
really, it's who's more right.
Who's more right? Well, you know. Friday the 13th received almost universally negative reviews from critics. Many citing it as formulaic despite Jason's cool new look. And they all acknowledged it's cool.
I just imagine, like, the movie poster
mm-hmm.
with like a little star sticker on the side of the poster being like Jason has a
cool new look. Yeah,
you know, or something cheesy. Right, like, although that's way more like Child's Play, but like mm-hmm. you know what I mean,
back with the cool new look.
Yeah, it's just someone's gotten a makeover.
Yeah. He's just like fucking Jason, calm down. He gets rid of the sack and there's a hockey mask underneath.
Or like they have a montage scene with like music playing and they're like giving him like a makeover.
A Queer Eye for the Straight Guy's coming in.
Yeah, or
just
something.
Just like, get rid of these overalls.
Uptown Girl is playing or something.
Oh my god. He's like, get rid of that machete. He's like, no, okay, don't get rid of it. Put it back in his hand. It's fine.
We're going to get those blood stains out of your overalls. Jonathan Van Nuys is just like, we're going to fix your hair, honey. We're going to give you this whole new look. You will be serving serial killer realness.
Comes back. Okay, so we lost two of our crew, but we gained a brand new Jason.
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Oh, my God. Yeah, I like it.
Oh my god.
Jason.
There we go.
That Jason was, Voorhees for Queer Eye, that, season 7 or
whatever. That was fun. Anyways. where are we? Anyways. Oh, so Variety's review for Jason states, quote, Friday the 13th was dreadful and took in more than 17 million. Friday the 13th Part 2 was just as bad and took in more than 10 million. Friday the 13th Part 3 is terrible too.
Okay, we don't need all reviews on all three movies. Fucking Variety.
Variety. I know. They're just like, it's all crap. This one's crap. It's probably going to make a lot of money.
Jesus.
Continuing with the trend of reviewing all three, Linda Gross of the Los Angeles Times states, Friday the 13th Part 3 is so terrible that Friday the 13th Part 1 and Friday the 13th Part 2 don't seem so bad.
Okay, Linda.
Yep. Our boy Roger Ebert didn't even bother reviewing this one.
He was just like, nah.
Nah, fuck it, dude.
And he's not even gonna see it.
He reviewed all the other ones. And this one particularly, he just bowed out.
Really?
He was like, nah, I'm not doing this shit. Not even Gene Siskel did it. God damn.
Wow.
So Paramount was actually also being sued around this time thanks to their attempts to actually monopolize this new 3D technology and pretty much screwing one of their partners who actually helped develop the tech. But they did lose the suit. However, their 3D gamble ended up fucking paying off because Friday the 13th Part 3 broke the horror opening weekend record established by the first film in the franchise, earning back its budget and then some with a weekend haul of, Alex, can you read it for me?
$9,406,522.
Yep, that was the record. Goddamn. Good fucking job. Anyways, it faced tough competition, though, from the likes of Poltergeist, Creepshow, The Thing, and Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. Oh, fuck. What a year for horror.
What an amazing year. God, what I would give just to see all these movies in theaters as they come out.
Dude, horror fans were, like, loving it. Like, yeah. Big time.
Seeing Creepshow in theaters?
I know.
How cool.
And you're like, oh, just a couple more months later, The Thing?
Yeah.
John Carpenter's next movie? Dude, it was pretty big. But ultimately ended up with a gross of $36.7 million, making it one of the most profitable films in this franchise. Woo. Again, up until the newer stuff. Yeah, up until then, dude.
Up until inflation kind of, yeah. Like, it's hard to account for certain things because inflation is a thing.
That's a very good point, yeah. But good old 3D, you know?
Yeah. So, plans to wrap up the series after the third installment were obviously scrapped.
Clearly.
The lessons learned filming Friday the 13th Part 3 were carried over to the next wave of 80s 3D films, such as Amityville 3D and Jaws 3D, the latter of which nearly killed the movement until James Cameron and, yes, My Bloody Valentine came to save the day.
Yep.
Go ahead and listen to our My Bloody Valentine episode for more on that.
Yeah, for a bit of James Cameron and the revival of 3D. Again, it's all connected.
It's all connected. Part 3 has gained more recognition among fans as the years have passed, though there are still some that place it somewhere in the middle in terms of franchise ratings, which brings us to good old Letterboxd.
Yay! And I would say it's in the middle, too, because there's been some shit. There's been some shit.
I mean, yeah. Let's
find out, yeah.
The film has a 2.8 rating out of 2,700 reviews, and so here are some highlights. Leticia Fernandez gives the film 3 stars, saying, if some dude was walking around the house on his hands all the time, I'd also kill him.
Yeah, that's a brutal fucking kill, though.
That was pretty wild. Yeah. I'm just like, why is he doing that?
Because that's his personality trait. He's athletic.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Hosea Morgan states in his review, which has no actual rating attached to it, quote, good on quite a few levels as an overly facetious, highly dysfunctional, more blatantly deranged remake of the first one. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But if this franchise doesn't begin to do more than subtly play into the formula, I expect to lose interest fast.
Yeesh.
All right, Hosea.
Hosea, dude. Coming in with his he wants to be Ebert. Look at that.
I know. I'm like, okay, this isn't Scrabble. You don't have to use as many high-letter words as possible.
Dysfunctional, facetious. Blatant.
Yeah. Yikes. Deranged. Subtly. Yeah.
He's no Brat Pitt.
No. Absolutely not.
Who I was looking, he didn't review this one. I know.
Todd gives this film 3.5 stars, saying, quote, Debbie's unborn child isn't included in Jason's kill count for this film because the liberal media won't let it be. Thanks for making me read that. Jesus Christ. Finally, user DPI73.
Yeah, that's him.
All right. States, quote, no one cared who Jason was until he put on the mask. Which, all
right. Good old Bane quote right there.
Uh-huh. Whatever. Good. I mean, yeah. It's kind of like gave him that horror iconography stance, so.
It saved the franchise. Literally.
This was supposed to be the last one.
Literally a hockey mask did it. Good old Detroit Red Wings.
I know. So that's what we have to thank the Red Wings for?
Yep.
Anyway, seeing a chance to make even more money and end the franchise on even higher notes, Frank Mancuso Jr. decided to bring back the hockey mask around 2 years later, as well as another franchise favorite, Tom fucking Savini, who does have a slight cameo in this movie. I don't know if you noticed it.
I didn't notice, no.
Okay, right before What's-Her-Face gets stabbed through the chest in the...
hamper?
In the camper?
Hamper.
No, it's not a hamper. It's a hammock.
Hammock. Hamper.
Hamper is where you put dirty clothes.
Oh my God, if that happened now?
No, hammock.
Hammock.
She's reading an issue of Fangoria.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And there's something about Tom Savini in there.
Oh, that's
awesome. So that's kind of cool.
That is nice.
So, which is really meta if you think about it, because that means Tom Savini exists in Friday the 13th universe.
Yeah.
And he also,
Yeah.
interesting.
He also established the Friday the 13th universe.
I know, so that's why I'm just like, dual universes maybe? Are we? I don't know. Anyway, so the franchise would also see the introduction of Corey Feldman as the iconic Tommy Jarvis and a pre-Back to the Future Crispin Glover for what would be one of its most beloved entries. I haven't seen this.
It's an interesting one.
I have no idea what this is even about. But we'll cover that when we take on Friday the 13th, the final chapter, most likely on another season of the Horrible People's Podcast.
Yep, because we don't have a Friday the 13th until next season. So
okay, yeah. So we'll cover it then, and it's just, spoiler alert, it's not the final chapter.
No, it's not even a little bit.
Not even close to the final chapter.
It's not even the first half of the franchise. It's not even the halfway point. It's like the first third.
Yeah.
It's actually ends the first third.
Yeah.
God damn.
So, with that, happy birthday, Anthony.
Yay! Thank you.
Friday the 13th, part 3.
Oh my god, we fucking did it, man.
Yeah, we did it.
Holy shit. So, what'd you think? What'd you think of Friday the 13th, part 3? I'll learn to say words.
I'll learn, eventually. Yeah. We've only been doing this for almost, a year and a half?
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad because I thought I was going to have like a more like solid opinion on the whole thing, but it was fine.
It was a Friday the 13th movie.
It was definitely a Friday the 13th movie. I wanted to like it a lot more than I did, but I kind of just felt myself just kind of being like, I could be napping right now, you know?
It was kind of like badly paced.
It was paced weirdly. I wanted like, I'm like, okay, let's get to the child murders.
Yeah.
Like, let's get to some teenage slashers. Like, hurry up and fuck so you can get killed. Like,
and they
let's
like
go.
Barely fucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't do a lot of the, they, you know where it is? I think I liked the opening because the opening had like a single take and it was like this whole thing where he takes out these fucking two people.
So, okay, Halloween had definitely come out by this point.
Yes.
Okay, so there's a scene in the very beginning where she's in, where there's that lady who yells out the window at her useless husband. And Jason's standing out in like this laundry, like,
yeah,
where like all the sheets are like floating in the, yeah, window. And I'm like, okay, this is just a straight up like mockery of Halloween, right?
Well,
like,
they couldn't copy Halloween 2, so they decided to just take scenes from Halloween 1 and plant them in the fucking film.
Well, that's the thing. I was just like, are we really just gonna, really? We're just gonna make that a staple of just making slashers hide in laundry now?
Like, with that Carpenter single take, too. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, that was just why I'm just like, come on, guys.
Ugh.
Come on.
Yeah, no, so, this one was fucking weird.
It was weird.
Like, I honestly, the whole girl being pregnant thing really threw, I'm like, why would, it's one line, and I think about the rest of the film. I'm like, I know she's gonna die, so why?
Well, she's not, like, visibly pregnant. It's not like she's, like, visibly 8 months pregnant, you
true,
know?
But like, it's just one of those things where,
well, I think that would have made it worse, like,
yeah,
because then it would have been like, it's like, you know, like, it would have, mm-hmm, been bad, because like the whole time it's mentioned offhandedly while she's in a car where everyone is smoking pot.
Yeah, with like, these stoners were lame. They weren't funny. They were just kind of like, oh, we're high. Yeah, that's it.
Well, and it was also like, there's like cops coming around the corner with their lights on and they're like, we're busted, and it's just like, clearly they're not here for you.
Yeah.
And then they start eating the weed.
Ugh.
And I'm just like, there are better ways to hide your stash.
Jeez.
Good lord, people.
I mean,
I'm not gonna give you advice on hiding your drugs, but like, come on.
Dude. Yeah, no, this one was weird. I mean, the thing is, like, it had the same thing My Bloody Valentine did, where once people started really dying, once he put on the mask, I was fine. I was totally fine.
But that was, like, the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah,
so you,
exactly,
had, like, an hour and 10 minutes you had to sit through to get there.
Mm-hmm. So I think, though, overall, I would say this is about the most middling a Friday the 13th movie can be. It's,
yeah,
like, it's, like, basic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's like box mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Like, it hits the spot, but it's, like, could be better, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely could. Like, it could use a little more pepper.
Yeah.
It could use some pepper.
It could use some pepper.
But it ain't got enough pepper. But it does have a mask, so it has enough butter.
Yeah, definitely. Or you might have put some sour cream in that,
yeah,
you know?
Okay.
So it's like, it has a little bit of extra decadence to it, but it's like, that's it, you know?
I like how we've used this mac and cheese analogy a couple times already.
This is, we haven't used it in comparison. We talked about mac and cheese on the podcast, but we've never used it as a comparison for movies.
I think this should be a metric of ours.
I think so.
Yeah, this would be fun. What type of mac and cheese? Oh my god.
Because I do love mac and cheese.
So. Me too. I want some now. Anyways. Okay, so what makes Jason Takei mask so iconic to you, though? And how does it actually stack up in comparison to other masks, say, in franchises like Halloween or Texas Chainsaw or whatever? Like,
I think for me, growing up, it was because the hockey mask was just, like, something that I was used to seeing. Like, it was more of an everyday object as opposed to, like, Leatherface or, or Michael Myers. Because that was, like, I mean, at the time, obviously, I didn't know it was, like, a William Shatner mask spray-painted white.
But it's not like you saw William Shatner every day.
It's, well, I mean, if you grew up in a Chucky house, maybe you did.
Yeah, true.
Which I did.
Oh, I didn't. But, we were a Star Wars house, goddammit. I saw Mark Hamill's face. That mask would freak me the fuck out.
But, yeah, so I think the hockey mask kind of gave it a little bit more of, like, a... You can see that in the store and have, or you can go to like a sporting goods store and just see a hockey mask and just be like, ooh, it's a Jason mask.
True.
And that, and have that be like that little creepy edge to it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I don't know, like, it can be augmented pretty well too. Mm-hmm. Like, you can fuck up a hockey mask and it's going to look like, oh, that's scary. Like, it's a hockey mask for a reason. It's kind of intimidating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I don't know, but it's like, it's like horror iconography. It's like cinema iconography. Like cinema.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is insane.
Like, I mean, even growing up, like as a kid, like you saw like a hockey mask, like even just out and about. Like you could see it in like your school's like sports shed and just be like, ah, Jason.
Yeah.
You know, like it, and it didn't even matter if you hadn't seen the movies. It was just something that was like in, it was just imprinted from like just common knowledge,
it's
into
culture.
Your brain. Yeah,
it's, it became, it was culture.
Cultural,
yeah. Yeah, and like even the slit in his mask, because that happens in this movie. She hits him with the axe.
Mm-hmm.
It's there for the rest of the films. Like, people are so, it's such a big deal.
Yeah, and this one, it's like kind of like shiny and new, and then of course throughout the rest of the movies, it gets kind of like grimied up. And
yeah,
all that. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's weird how it's, this whole thing came from such a middling movie.
Well, also, it came from such, like, an offhanded, like, this is what I have in my bag right now, you know?
But, you know, again, if again, listeners, if you listen to our previous two entries on this franchise, that's just how they roll. That's
true.
Just how they roll. So,
what do you think of Richard Brooker's performance as Jason? How does he stack up to other Jasons or as slasher icons?
I kind of like it.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I think it was interesting that we got, like, we got straight on like footage of his face this time around, because like normally it's like quick shot here, a side glance here, or it's like the dead of night.
Yeah,
but this one you got like full face, like
in the daylight. Yeah,
like extended view, and I thought that was kind of cool. But I liked it. I thought it was fine. You know, he does like tall, menacing, like stocky real well. So
yeah, see, the thing that I really liked about his performance is the movie's kind of broken up to parts, because until he gets the mask, it's like Friday the 13th part 1, where it's like a hand's coming out in the dark, or like you don't see anything, like it's shot in that kind of style.
Yeah,
and he does okay with that, but once he starts like chasing, he's a hulking kind of, like, he's a fucking juggernaut.
Yeah, he's,
which
like
I think is cool.
Ugh, yeah.
Ugh. But so he gives a pretty powerful performance. I think it's pretty cool.
I like it. Honestly, it's very synonymous with the other Jason performances.
Mm-hmm.
So which like, it's kind of shitty, but it's also like all of them kind of blend together for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's like kind of hard for me. Like, I really like this person's Jason, or I really like this person's Jason, as opposed to Michael Myers, who it's
much
easier to pinpoint.
Yeah, I'm about to say, this guy's no Nick Castle, Mike Myers.
Yeah,
he's just not. He's not Nick Castle.
Exactly.
But I mean, like, he still follows kind of the same rules, because they're fucking Jason up a little bit sometimes. And he takes it and gets up,
yeah,
which is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah,
he takes his hits and then he gets right back up again.
Because the other Jasons, they'll just walk sometimes.
Yeah.
They'll just like, oh, and I appear next to you. Like, this one he had geography to work with.
Yeah. In the immortal words of Tub Thumping, he gets knocked down and he gets back up again.
And you can't keep him down.
Thank you.
You just can't. You ain't never gonna keep him down.
Thank you.
Oh, God. Oh, gosh. Damn.
So, how would you rate the teenage fodder in this film compared to previous films we have covered? So, I'm actually going to answer my own question.
Do it.
First off, I don't think they're teenagers.
Oh, they're not.
They're
huh?
like college students. They're like, yeah. They're straight up co-eds.
And then I would also place the bikers in this group because they're also fodder.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of diverse.
It's more diverse than other Friday the 13th movies yeah. I've seen, because normally they're all white people.
They are. That's true. And, like, I don't know. They, when I think about it, they have some personality, but it's not, like, enough. The only one that really has it is Shelly. And, like, he gets killed all whack. And, I don't know. Like, they're fodder. They're, like, again, they're basic. They're, like, fucking plain goldfish.
Yeah.
They are the goldfish snacks that you're like, okay, well, that's just cheese. Cool.
It is what it is.
I'm full of cheese now. Got what I wanted.
Sure.
Shelly's the one kind of crisp one that you're just like, oh, this tastes a little different. Okay, so then there's like, none of them left.
Like those slightly burnt Cheez-Its.
Oh, my God. No. This movie is not Cheez-It level. Okay. All. No,
I'm
no,
sorry.
No. This is,
I'm sorry for no. even getting going there.
Nah, uh-uh. That's the next one.
Because I was going to say that because you can buy boxes of, like, the slightly burnt Cheez-Its now. Of just the slightly
You can,
burnt.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just going to be like, you can buy boxes of Shelly's.
You can. You can. And there are Friday the 13th movies that's kind of like burnt Cheez-It. Like the next one.
Okay, we'll
yeah, it has better characters,
we'll,
for sure.
We'll get into that for sure.
And part
god,
two.
I can't wait till we cover the 2009 remake.
Oh my god, dude. That's goldfish right there.
That is off brand. Like, that is like golden fish friends. Like.
Oh my god. Yeah. Golden sardines. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, like that's it,
oh
it's
god.
Bad.
It's so, yeah, no, I would rate this teenage fodder, like, if we're gonna, it's just right down the middle. Like, really. Shelly kind of elevates a little bit.
I would rank it on the lower end and make Shelly the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And make him be like, okay, he's the only redeemable part, except for maybe the other stoner guy. I thought he was kind of cool. But
God,
like,
He kind of bitched out, though.
Yeah.
With the girl, like, he was always like, I'm not going to go touch the electrical thing. And he's just like, it wasn't,
But there was also, like, a couple moments where, like, she was just like, go fix the electrical box.
Oh, she's a bitch.
Right. And he was just like, I'm not going to go there by myself. And I was just like, the voice of reason. I also would not do that.
I think I just wanted to see him die.
That's
so
fair.
I'm like, well, just go die.
But that's like, I knew he was going to die.
Yeah. He was stringing along too much for me in a way
it's
that was
true.
Was
well,
entertaining.
A lot of the deaths were strung along. And I was like,
too
come
much,
on. Because
I
thought What's-Her-Face was going to get stabbed in the shower. And she didn't get stabbed in the fucking shower.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh, we'll get to the deaths. They're coming up. Anyways, so, how do you feel, though, actually, about the brighter color palette and lighting in this film compared to the previous two entries, considering this was the case because it had to be in 3D and they needed a background? How did that affect the film in any way? Do you think it did?
I liked it better.
Really?
It was fine. I mean, like, there was more daytime scenes, and I think that kind of lulled the viewers into, like, a false sense of security in certain points.
Okay.
I don't think it made it worse, but I also don't think it really made it better.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it distinguished it, I would say.
I mean, I think, like, if you were to show me, like, screenshots from the movies, I think that was what would make it one of the most visually distinctive parts of the movie.
Really?
Well, yeah, because it's brighter.
It's so much brighter. To me, though, that kind of took away from it, just because 2 was so atmospheric. Compared to, like, it didn't look cheap like 1 did.
Mm.
And it had, like, a mood to it. And then this one was, like, it had, like, that 80s song when it popped in after the fucking thing.
Yeah.
That disco song.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of put the vibe. And then you get the kids don't get killed for, like, an hour. So I'm just like, am I watching, like, a teenage fucking drama right now?
That's true.
Like, I don't know. It threw me off. It threw me off.
Yeah. I think the lighting, yeah. I think it felt, I don't know. Honestly, I didn't put a whole lot of thought into it, to be perfectly honest with you.
It's totally fine. I mean, it is its own thing, though. Like, none of the other movies look like this one.
No.
They really don't.
I mean, as long as they all take place in the woods, except for, like, you know, the one where Jason and Freddy go to space.
Just Jason goes to space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, Freddy...
There's Freddy versus Jason, and then there's...
Jason X.
And then Jason X, which
yes.
is Jason going to space.
Jason going to space, which is actually really badass. I like that movie.
Really?
I love it. I did not like it when I first saw it, but I watched it again.
We're going to have to talk about it eventually.
Dude, I watched it again like 6 months ago, and I was like, okay, let's see what... Oh, shit.
Okay.
All right. But then I also like Freddy versus Jason because it's Jason in Elm Street. which has its own vibe to it.
We will get into we'll get there. Also, one of the things I love about the Friday the 13th franchise is that it constantly takes place in the woods. It constantly takes place, like, in this area.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how are the police just not, like, you know, quarantining this area? Like, no one go into the murder woods.
There was police in the beginning of this movie, and they're just like, well, murder happened, and then you don't see the police for shit for afterwards.
And then they, like, just wave the bus full of children.
Yeah. fucking Vlad. Dracula. Yeah.
Vlad the Impaler over here. The bus full of children. Jesus Christ. The bus full of children.
Voorhees.
Vesen Voorhees.
Oh my god.
Anyway, they just, like, wave them along in, straight into the woods, like, have fun in the murder woods, children.
Yeah.
Enjoy your time camping. Like,
this just happens here, it's fine.
Don't get killed. Watch out for bears. Like,
they're more pissed off. Like, oh man, the people who run the laundromat are fucking dead now. God damn it. It's more of an inconvenience for them.
I know. Like, they're just like, how are we going to get our groceries now? Like,
Jesus.
Good God.
I got to put tape around this fucking thing. There's fresh eggs in there. Oh, shit.
Anyway, how do you think this film would look with modern 3D technology? Would it be effective or enhance the movie at all?
It'd look good. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I kind of wanted, like, seeing it now, I kind of wanted to see still, like, that fucking yo-yo at my face. The fact that I didn't get to see it in 3D, I felt like I was missing something a little
bit. That's true. I mean, there's a lot of it. Like, there was just, like, that, and then there was other, like, little tidbits, like, little scenes, like, additions.
Like, being stabbed through the stomach and shit. Like, you know, oh, the hook shot. That was a
cool
one.
Yeah, that one was, I was just,
and,
like,
the eyeball.
The eyeball shot. I was also just like, this is a 3D movie.
Yeah. No, I...
Well, and it's funny, because I forgot that this was supposed to be, or this was a 3D movie until I watched it. And then I was just like, was this supposed to be in 3D? And then I was like, fuck yeah, it was.
Yep. No, absolutely. Like, you see, I would think modern 3D technology would make it, because I remember we were doing My Bloody Valentine. One of the criticisms was that, like, if you moved your head, it would blur, so you kind of, and the effects weren't as advanced. So give us some James Cameron effects, you know, I could dig it.
That's fair.
Just because I want to see it in 3D, that's it. Like, it's a curiosity more than anything.
That is very fair.
Yeah. Well, there goes that one. How about, well, yeah, for you, would you say? Yeah.
I'm indifferent. Like, indifferent. Again, like, I don't think it would have made me like the movie anymore.
No, that's a good point.
Because I don't watch 3D movies anyway.
Yeah.
I can't see in 3D.
You can't?
No.
Why not?
Unless I put them over my glasses. I can't see.
Oh, I do that. Yeah.
But then it gives me a headache. Because
it's fucking annoying.
But then I have too much shit going on, like, right next to my head. So then it gives me a headache. So
yeah,
I don't watch 3D.
I've had that encounter before. Fucking Avengers. God damn it.
You watched Avengers in 3D?
I watched it in IMAX, son. Yeah.
Alright.
Uh-huh. No, wait. That was Avengers 2. Avengers 1 I also saw in 3D because that's the only one they had. Yeah. Yeah.
Latino.
Good old college. Anyways.
Oh my god.
I know. Long ago.
I was a junior in high school.
Jesus. Alright. I need whiskey. Anyways. So, why do you think there was such a disparity between critics and audiences in this time, especially since this was during the so-called slasher fatigue, which did not plague the previous entries?
So, I think the slasher fatigue definitely applied more to critics than audiences. I think audiences probably had more of a bloodlust than ever. I think...
That's a really good assessment. I like that.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. No, you're on point.
I think audiences, like, loved slasher movies. I think they still wanted more. Because at this point, like, we're only, like, five-ish years into the birth of, like...
Yeah, post-Halloween. Five years.
Of, like, the slasher genre. So people are still getting used to it. Like, there's still momentum even building for, like, you know? As opposed to critics who are just like, okay, I've seen, like, 12 of these movies. As opposed to audiences who get to pick and choose of, like, what movies they see. So at this point, they're only getting bits and pieces of certain franchises that they have attachments to.
True.
So at this point, we're talking Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. Those are the big ones.
Yeah. Well, and then the thing, too, I think, is that this is also during the prime, like, Reagan era, where just, like, any intellectual fucking sucks. Let's rah-rah, ha-ha.
Or even anything that's, like, gross or weird or what, or horror in this instance, like mm-hmm. anything that could be any form of escapism is yeah. just like whatever, you guys are fucking
anti-establishment
weird.
Shit. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's what I think. I mean, again, I'm not like super super in tune with what was going on at the time, but like mm-hmm. my suspicion, especially going with looking at the numbers of like what the movie made in the box office, like mm-hmm. audiences were fine with it, like yeah. they were just like, keep it coming, like,
dude,
you know,
fucking Steve Miner knew.
Yeah,
he knew,
and they didn't, and I don't think slasher fatigue, quote unquote, really caught up with audiences until much much later,
until the Jason Goes to Manhattan.
Yeah.
that's when they get him. Yeah. Oh yeah, oh yeah,
yeah. So that's probably something, you know, much much later that would. And then at that point, you have so many franchises that are kind of rolling out around that time.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably something a little bit more...
Down the line. Yeah, we're not at prime oversaturation levels yet.
Yeah.
Not yet.
We're getting
not
there.
Yet. We're getting there,
for critics,
yeah.
they probably see it coming.
And you know, the thing is, like, it's going to get worse for them.
Yeah.
It's going to get way worse in the coming years, because Nightmare on Elm Street's like 2 years away.
Yeah.
So it's like... That's another revival happening right there. Like, it's just nonstop.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street coming in is just, like, it changes the whole game, because then it adds, like, a whole other big, obviously, slasher icon to
that,
the game.
Yeah, and then your killers can have personalities, which they're just like, new rules!
Yeah, because, I mean, once you get to Freddy Krueger, and because Freddy Krueger has a fucking personality, as opposed
yeah.
to Jason, who's, like, this, like, mumbling, like, mm-hmm. blob of a human. And then you have Michael Myers, who doesn't talk at all.
Doesn't say shit.
So, yeah, and then you have Freddy Krueger, who's a chatterbox mm-hmm. and, like, is
throwing innuendo out there.
Yeah,
and
who's
shit.
As witty as they come.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. We got some horror to cover on the Horrible Hills podcast, don't we? Ah, damn.
Anyway, but moving on, unless you have anything else.
No, that's it. You nailed it, honestly. Yeah, good job.
Thank you. What about this movie has aged badly, and what is surprisingly held up, in your opinion? Because I have no opinion on this question whatsoever.
I think the bikers were a little racist.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I think that aged kind of bad. Like, there were times where I'm just like, dude, come on. Like,
there were moments where I'm just like, we're really playing up the stereotype.
Yeah, playing
we?
It up like a motherfucker. And then they get killed, like, right away. They're just like, okay, cool, break time. Let's murder, like, the ethnic people. And then go back and see the teens having fun. Or the young adults having fun, whatever.
Let's let the whiteys live as long
yeah.
as humanly possible.
How do we extend the runtime of this movie? Kill the darkies.
It's true. It's true, though. Like, I was just like, wow, they just... added, because like by adding these like auxiliary characters
mm-hmm.
it gave the movie, like, it added that 20 minutes
it did
needed. Like, I was just like, wow, you guys, because like they had this whole like subplot, like we're gonna burn down the barn and we're gonna
yeah.
do this and we're gonna do that, and it's just, and I'm like, oh my god, and then they get fucking murked right away, and I'm like, okay.
And they just make them criminals, though, man. Like,
I know. I'm just like, okay, first of all, way to stereotype bikers.
Yeah.
Way to stereotype black bikers.
Yes.
And a way to make, yeah, and then just assume that they're all criminals. And they're also very young. Like, I'm like,
yeah.
what's going on here?
It's just.
That was weird.
They're killing as many stones as they can.
Well,
or
also,
as many birds as they can.
I really think they're just trying to kill as many people as possible.
But, like. Man, they went, like, hard jive in there.
I agree.
Like, hard jive.
Yeah, like, I liked the addition of their characters, but their characters were racist.
Not only that, like, the one of them lives, but he gets his hand chopped off and killed in, like, less than 10 seconds. Like, he comes back later on to save the day slightly. It's like, oh, white woman in trouble. And then, dead.
Yeah.
Like, fucking dead.
So it's all fucked.
And I also think the rape subplot, like, what the hell, dude? Like...
So, I didn't even pick up on that.
No? Oh, that's, like, a big thing.
I might have spaced out.
That's, like, a big thing, though. Because, like, she keeps talking about, like, how she, like, oh, I lost my memory, and I don't know what happened, and
okay,
this guy
yes.
was chasing me.
Yes.
And
okay, yeah, I just, that I remember.
Yeah, and then he's, like frothing over her and chasing her through the woods in the flashback, and it's pins her down almost.
Okay, so it's implied rape. Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay, so, weird.
It's implicit, and, like, but, like... As close to not explicit, but like you're getting closer than you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the camera work and things, like somehow that's where the dark cinematography came in and like all this shit. And I'm just like, dude, like why even have that? Like, yeah.
That is absurd.
And then what aged well? The hockey mask.
Agreed.
The hockey mask.
Okay.
And maybe Shelly probably a little bit, even though he's a little annoying. That's about it.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say the plot or the kills, just because, like, there's other Friday the 13th movies.
I'm not even going to give this a kill of the film because they were all mediocre.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I like some of these kills, actually.
I mean, I liked them, but they were, like, I'm just, like, none of them I was really, like, wow, goodbye.
That's a good point.
You know?
I would say I...
None of them was a Kevin Bacon arrow through the chest.
Well, they redid that fucking one, dude.
I know. That's why I was just like, come on.
Yeah.
I wanted them to be more creative.
I did like the harpoon in the eyeball.
That was cool.
That was pretty cool. Because that was the one where I actually liked to see a 3D effect. Like, psh, right in the face. And she just fucking fell into the goddamn lake.
I would have liked to see the dude walking on his hands because he gets slashed and then he just falls over and he's dead.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I would have liked to have seen the nitty gritty of that.
Yeah, I think that got cut by the MPAA.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's the one that for sure. Oh, absolutely.
Because by the time like he's found hanging from the ceiling, he's like cut in half. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, come on.
So how would you rate this compared to the other Friday the 13th films you've seen?
I've only seen these three.
Oh, well... With the three, then?
3, 1, 2.
3, 1, 2? Oh, you'd put this over 1 and 2?
No. I mean, in reverse order. Like,
oh,
I mean, like...
Three so, below.
So, 3 is my least favorite so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then 1 is, like, in the middle. And then 2's been my favorite so far.
Right? Oh, I agree.
Okay.
I agree. Yeah, out of those. And then if I'm going to go overall in the franchise, because I've seen every single one of these, this is right down the middle.
Really?
Maybe a little lower middle. Just, I think I attribute significance because of the mask.
Okay.
But, yeah, you know, it's like right there.
So, I've only ever seen the first one, and I love the first one so much that, mm-hmm. like, I was always hesitant about watching the other ones because I know
mm-hmm.
that Jason goes to some weird places, including space and Manhattan.
Yep.
As well as Elm Street.
Yes.
So, I was always hesitant about watching his, the sequels. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited that we'll be covering them together.
You know
so.
What, though? It's kind of funny because we both changed our minds on 2 because we didn't expect it to be as good as
I wasn't expecting it to be good at all, but I actually liked it quite a bit.
2 was pretty good. But then right now, what you're experiencing is what everybody else experienced.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's going to start declining. It's going to start, but I will
bring on the camp, my friend.
I will say, though, the next one brings in the Corey Feldman character, mm-hmm. Tommy Jarvis. He is essentially the Laurie Strode. Of the 80s Friday the 13th franchise. So
love it.
There's one more shot in the arm, and then it turns to shit.
Love it.
Oh, it turns to shit. Ah.
Bring on the camp.
Yep.
All right. Last question. How would you rank this film out of 5 haphazardly assembled hockey masks?
Ooh, I'd give it 2. I'd give it 2.
I was going to give it 3 to be kind.
I mean, it is the third one.
Yeah. So.
But, I mean, I feel like we've watched... enough movies where if my barometer is 2.5, I'm like, it is right below 2.5. Like, I give it a 2.25. That's what I'm going with. 2.25.
2.25?
Yeah.
All right. I agree.
2.25. Hard 2.25.
Collective 2.25.
There we go.
It's not a good movie.
No.
I feel like I need to give it another shot when I'm not, like, super exhausted, because I was really tired when I watched it, but...
I did the whole lights off, projector, like, all the, like, the things I... That, and
you thought you needed to do?
And then I was just like, But, I mean, hey, whatevs. This is the reason why the franchise is still alive-ish.
Yeah.
Oh, not now, because of the legal battles, but, you know.
Well, I mean... But it's lived on in horror iconography, so we will hold on to it for as long as we can until the legal battles end and we can finally get a Friday the 13th part 13.
Right? Oh my god, part 13. We're waiting for it.
We're waiting for it. But with that, that was Friday the 13th part 3,
mm-hmm.
Directed by Steve Miner. So we did it.
We did it. We made it, Steve.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yay.
Happy birthday,
Anthony.
Birthday
time. We get so drunk on the weekend.
Yeah, this weekend, Anthony and I and his friends are going to a comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
And then next week, I'm going to be in New York.
Yep.
So I will be around. Thankfully, we have enough episodes recorded, so it shouldn't.
We won't interfere. Okay. Yeah,
it's not going to interfere with recording or anything. But I will be in New York City. If you're in New York City, hi Caitlin, hit me up. let me know spooky things that I need to do while I'm out there.
Oh my God, you're gonna love New York.
I'm so excited.
I did New York last year. It's fucking awesome.
I'm really excited.
Oh, get a bagel. I'm going to get a bagel.
He's been telling me this like every week for the past like month.
And go to the Comedy Cellar.
Okay.
And get Joe's Pizza.
Okay.
And let's tell the people a little hint of what we're doing next week.
Yes, next week.
Because we called an audible and changed it.
Huh?
So we called an audible and changed it. Our initial plan for what next week was going to be, we changed it this morning.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I was just like, I thought we already gave a hint and then we had changed it since then. And I was what is happening?
So a last minute adjustment.
Yes, there's a last minute adjustment. We were going to do one thing, but we changed it. So next week... And this is now our most covered director.
Yes, it is.
Our most covered director is making a resurgence on the podcast.
And recently covered, too.
Recently covered. We're just going all in on this director this year, I guess. Which I'm not complaining.
Hell no, it's a good fucking movie.
Because you guys know, you guys have probably guessed by now, but he is one of my favorites. He's one of Anthony's favorites. And we are covering the one that you guys have probably been wanting us to cover forever.
Yep.
So next week for Anthony's birthday month, is his birthday mandate continues. We are covering that movie in particular next week. So please make sure you join us then. Until then, please make sure you give us a 5-star rating and write us a review on iTunes. If you haven't yet, we've gotten nothing but outpouring love and support from you guys. And it means the absolute world to us. Like, honestly, we cannot thank you enough. It's been so fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just even if I'm having a shitty day, I will read those reviews.
Yeah, like, too.
It's so awesome. So thank you for that. If you want to stay up to date on everything going on the podcast, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. On Twitter and Facebook, we are at Horror People Pod. And then on Instagram, we are at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE, People's Podcast. And then if you want to find Anthony, you can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Yeah.
And with that, I think we're good to go for the week. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Again, last final happy birthday, Anthony.
It gives me such joy.
Yeah, so hope you have an awesome birthday, and I am proud to call you my friend.
Oh, me too.
So we will catch you next week, and that was my cat, so it's time for us to go.
Yep,
so
they want food.
All right, catch you next week, guys.
See ya.